I'm Mark Strassman, producer and host of BookChat.org. We're in Beverly Glen, California, part of Los Angeles, and we're about to speak to Brian Kilcommons, who's just written Pause to Consider. Welcome to BookChat.org.
Thanks, Mark. It's nice being here.
Why don't we dwell on the title for a minute? It's P-A-W-S, to consider. Obviously, there's a double meaning here.
Yeah, with people selecting a predator to bring into their homes and their lives. Dogs were created for very specific reasons, and between Sarah and myself, we have a combined 40 years of experience, and people seem to be selecting dogs many times based on a friend's dog, a dog they grew up with, or how it looks. And for the people to be successful with selecting purebred dogs, one, they need to know what the dog was bred to do.
Say a little bit about, it's not exactly evolution because it involved human intervention, but talk about the process that created the various species that are now available and which you survey and pause to consider.
Well, the various breeds have been created. If you look at the groups that the AKC has broken dog them down into, you have your working group, which is basically a lot of the guard breeds, and crossover with hunting, the herding group, the terrier group, the non-sporting group, which is kind of a catch-all group with Chows and Dalmatians, two of the more difficult dogs to own, to your toy group, your sporting group. So if you look at the different groups, you know, hounds, let's say, there are two types, sight and scent. They were bred to work with, as far as for man, not with man. And so they're going to be a little bit more difficult to own, and they're going to be activated, whether it's by movement or scent, and the head goes on autopilot. So getting a hound breeds, you want to make sure that you socialize early and that you do early training where you can teach the dog to respond and do an override on what they've been bred to do.
Both because I'm curious about it and because I think it will help listeners and readers of Pause to Consider to understand the underlying dynamic of the dog breeding process. Through what time period and by what process in general, I mean, we don't have time to go into all the details, did the different breeds emerge, and how did the social function or the social requirements of the time and place that they were bred lead to the different varieties that we have now?
The varieties of dogs were really created to do different jobs until we had more disposable time. I think one of the difficulties now is that where before dogs were very functional and were based on that function, we're now really looking at the dogs as companions. So many of the dogs, I mean, you put a cocker spaniel in the field, you're going to find they'll get lost, you know, and you need a flashcard for a bird for them to understand what it is. So they're really no longer a functional hunting dog. Because of that, we're getting a lot of very different behavior, and some of it not too good. You talk to most people about cockers, aggression is not unknown to the breed.
So, in fact, the problem with breeds that are, quote, problems is that they were, really oversimplify it, it's like taking a country dog and putting it into the city. It's dogs that are bred for functions in an agricultural society of low density are now living in a technological society of high density, and the traits that were bred in them over thousands of years are not necessarily adaptive in a situation that's evolving by the month.
I think the challenge that most people have is to really do their homework before getting a purebred dog, knowing that a terrier is going to like to fight. A good day in a terrier's life is where it can kill a small animal or fight with something twice its size, because that's what we bred them for. And with it, you know, we're seeing more and more the media driving certain breeds. Look at the Jack Russell Terrier. You know, I nicknamed them the Cuisinarts without covers. It's a very primitive breed. You know, there's a barking gene that we put in there. So when they're stimulated, they go to a higher level of aggression, and they usually bark. With appropriate training, they can live in the city. But it takes a little bit more work than other breeds that people can select that would adjust a little bit better, since they don't have those characteristics of being willing to fight with other animals and barking hysterically once they are stimulated.
So what you're trying to do in Pause to Consider is essentially educate the public about how to pick a dog that will suit their lifestyle and situation and environment, and suit the dog too, of course.
Not only as far as suiting their lifestyle and meeting their needs, but this can be one of the best relationships you'll ever have in your life. You know, it's a 10 to 15-year commitment. If you do it properly, it can be absolutely wonderful. But, you know, roughly one-third of the dogs in the shelter systems are purebred dogs. You know, that can be stopped. That would really be great if we could knock out that one third. But many times this is due to people selecting breeds that are inappropriate for them. That, or they get schnookered by people that are unethical.
Okay, we're going to talk about the unethical people a little later. Let's talk about the ethical people first. Were you a student of the completely famous Barbara Woodhouse?
I worked with Barbara both in here and England for over 3 years. So, yes, and our training philosophy I still use today. Fun, fair, and firm.
Say a little bit more about what her philosophy was and what her significance was in the history of training philosophy, essentially.
Barbara was a very practical woman who had an absolutely magical touch with dogs. She really loved dogs and liked working with them. And it showed. I mean, she was training dogs for over 50 years when I first met her. But, you know, that training philosophy, fun, fair, and firm, is a great teaching philosophy. You make the training fun. You're fair, which means if the dog isn't responding the way you want, you look to what you're doing. Don't blame the dog. And firm is really clarity of thought, knowing exactly what you want the dog to do in a non-emotional way and being able to communicate that.
Okay, I got the following message about bad dog behavior from your book, that it's caused essentially by one of two things: a bad match, which is what you're trying to avoid here, and it's caused by neglecting human responsibilities to the dog. Is that about right?
When I see a dog misbehaving, I don't look at the dog. I look at the other end of the lead. That's where the responsibility lies. Dogs can't train themselves. Also, dogs will revert to their heritage. If you have a Rottweiler, and that's the second most popular dog in the country, which is an unmitigated disaster in my opinion, and you don't train it, you're going to have a dog that's going to be aggressive with most of the interactions that it has. You know, these aren't dogs for the novice. So lack of training combined with poor selection winds up with the dogs usually euthanized or surrendered. And we wrote Pause to Consider for people to understand that this is a long-term relationship and the selection process can be done in such a way where it'll be successful for both you and the dog.
You list a number of reasons why people say they're getting a dog, and then you essentially give the bonus answer at the end and explain what really the good reason is to have a dog. Could you go over briefly what some of the commonly stated reasons for getting a dog are, and then bring it around to what you think is really the best way to approach it?
One is, we can encounter this consistently, they're going to get a dog for the kids. You don't get a dog for the kids, you get a dog for the family. And ultimately, the parents are going to have to be responsible for the care and the well-being of the dog. It's way too much responsibility to put on a child. If you treat it as a family venture, it's a great learning experience, it's a wonderful way to teach kids responsibility, but basically the parents have to oversee this. The other is the companionship. But part of companionship, which is nice, is there's a certain responsibility that comes with that. If you're working 10, 12 hours a day, you don't have the time for a dog. Dogs are social animals. They need interaction. They need physical and mental stimulation, which means exercise. And it does change your lifestyle. You know, or the common thing people say also is that they're getting they grew up with the dog. Nothing stays the same. You know, the Golden Retriever, 15 years ago, there was never any aggression problems within the breed. Now it is almost commonplace. The Golden has gotten so popular, it is racked with genetic disease. There's abnormal behavior in the breed. So what you grew up with is not necessarily going to be the same type of dog they have now, especially if it's popular. Can you find good Goldens? Yes. Is it difficult? Very. There are some good breeders out there that are testing for genetic disease and what is appropriate temperament. But there are a lot of people that are in the game for the money.
Well, why don't we talk about that a little bit? And the book is filled with references to unethical breeding practices, essentially. What's involved with that? What's causing it? And what can people do about it?
It's not just unethical breeding practices. A lot of it's ignorance. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to throw two dogs in the garage that have AKC papers and produce a litter. It does take a lot of dedication and information and research to understand bloodlines, understand how genes work. Being willing, good breeders are really very tough on their breeding stock as far as what the temperament should be and what the health should be. And they'll wean out the stock that is not maintaining that level of quality. A lot of people who are breeding dogs don't even know what the diseases are in the breed, and it kind of pops up. And the other thing here, Mark, is people live with the dog, not with the puppy. All puppies are cute, but dogs are genetic packages.
You know, you wouldn't want to pick a roommate by walking down the street going, ooh, that one's cute. And then you come home and you find out the parents are Lizzie Borden and Charles Manson. You know, you may have some concerns on what their genetic predisposition is going to be. It's the same thing with dogs. You want the dogs where they are bred by people that are interested in the breed, because good breeders don't make money. If they break even, they're lucky. They don't take credit cards. They breed either between 1 to 3 litters maximum a year. They want to meet you. They're going to have to ask you more questions than you ask them. If you have children, they're going to want to meet the children. And they're going to get a lot of interaction here as far as finding out exactly how good you're going to be as an owner and if the breed is correct for you. One thing breeders say that pet stores never say, right, is no.
Why don't we move on to some of the specifics in the book, which is full of specifics, more things about more different kinds of dogs than I imagined existed when I started reading it. What are the general types, the big categories of dogs that you use to break down the list and to give people general counsel as to what they might want to look for?
I think what's unusual about Paws to Consider is when we tell the truth. You know, not all dogs are good with children. For one, not all dogs are easy to train. And the different breeds have very specific characteristics. And also, is what it entails to really own a dog successfully. The amount of exercise it needs, the income you're going to need in order to care for the dog properly, how it's going to impact on your time. So we split Paws to Consider up into different categories, like not for everyone, which are the more difficult breeds to own. And you should have either a higher commitment to getting one of these dogs or prior experience to own it successfully. Low shed breeds for people with allergies. 9 to 5 dogs that are easier to keep and need less exercise if you have a really busy household. And we're constantly recommending the breed rescue groups. It's an inexpensive way to get a purebred dog, and you're doing a good deed at the same time. And the rescue groups handle all the problems, so they're great to resource saying, okay, I want to get a Rottweiler. What are some of the problems? They'll give you a laundry list, or call your veterinarian or humane society. If you're going to get a purebred dog, buy it from a reputable breeder or go to a shelter or a rescue group.
But don't go to a pet store.
Pet stores are flesh peddlers. We've been fighting that industry now for over 2 decades. And it really comes down to the point that the consumer is responsible for the industry continuing. We can't legislate these people out of business. But every time somebody walks into a pet store and buys a puppy, one, it's usually a genetic time bomb, because I don't care what the stores say. Good breeders do not sell to pet stores. They want to meet you. They're not going to use a third party to have your puppy passed off to somebody who can show up with a credit card and get the puppy, and there's no other information exchanged.
There's every time a certain type of dog mauls a young baby, there's a cry to ban certain breeds of dogs. What's your take on all that?
Well, with dog bites, which are epidemic in this country, and most of those bitten are children under the age of 10, a couple of things. One, the dogs that bite most often are unneutered male dogs with the ages of 1 and 3. And it's not the breed, it's the deed. Now, certain dogs get popular, like Rottweilers and Pit Bulls. Now, if we legislate them out, okay, we start banning those breeds, I guarantee you there are 10 other breeds that can walk in their footsteps tomorrow. The same idiots, right, who are getting these dogs and allowing them to be aggressive or making them aggressive will just select another breed. I think we need to look at the human behavior. That and that people make a educated decision when getting a dog. Most people, again, shouldn't have a Rottweiler. They're way too much dog for most people to handle.
Some dogs that aren't too much, I didn't realize until I read it that sheepdogs were bred to look like sheep to fool the predators.
Yeah, and the thing is the amount of maintenance they need is extraordinary. If you're going to keep an old English sheepdog in full coat, you're talking at least 3 hours of brushing every week. Now, I don't know about you, but when I go to the barber, I say, cut it so I can get out of the shower, shake my head, and it's done. So it's a higher level of commitment to own a dog like that successfully.
What's a 9-to-5 dog in more detail?
9-to-5 dogs are dogs that are easier and can kind of sleep most of the day and don't need a lot of exercise. We have greyhounds, pugs. I mean, there are all different types of dogs. And these are suggestions. I mean, it can... a German Shorthair Pointer be a 9-to-5 dog? Sure. If you're running 4 or 5 miles a day and the dog is getting appropriate exercise, it can work out. But we wanted to look at some breeds that were less on the activity level so people could identify some of them. So they don't wind up getting a sporting dog that's going to tear their house apart because it's going stir crazy.
What is it that people can get from dogs that they often or at all can't get from people?
I think people would be better off if we had some of the, you know, the attributes dogs have. Non-judgmental relationship. They're always happy to see you. They're unbelievably forgiving. They're always ready for a good time. When you talk to a dog or you pet a dog, it reduces your heart rate, reduces your blood pressure. And they've done studies that you're more social. If you walk outside with a dog, people have more interactions with you. They'll talk to you more readily. They'll smile at you. I think it's a wonderful humanizing factor for people to have dogs in the cities.
Maybe we can say something about some particular breeds. I was driving through town a few days ago and was stopped at a light, and there were two collies, which I thought one, they seemed to be mother and child, sitting in the car very patiently with a look of sensitivity and intelligence. Maybe it's my projection. Are collies particularly, sensitive and intelligent?
Collies are a nice breed. We recommend them for people with children, families with children. And there are two types. There's a smooth coat and then a rough coat. But collies, nice breed, but most dogs are really sensitive, and they pick up our emotions. I mean, that's why people like dogs so much, because they feel that there is an exchange and that the dog does understand them. And it creates a consistency in their life. Now, don't forget, the dog doesn't look at you when you come in the door going, by the way, you're gaining weight.
All right. Say a little bit about dachshunds, miniature dachshunds, and what their personality type is and what their particular niche is.
Dachshunds are two sizes. There's a standard and the mini. They're a nice breed. I mean, they were bred to hunt badgers, basically. But they can be real barky and sometimes a little bit snappy. They're more like a terrier type and temperament than they are a hound. But, again, you get a dog like this from a reputable breeder or a rescue group. You do early training with it. You socialize it. They wind up being a phenomenal pet. They're a very smart little dog, and they're very feisty.
Say something in general about the psychology of housebreaking.
Well, dogs have a natural instinct to keep clean. If you utilize that instinct by crating or confining with a puppy gate, most dogs and puppies can be readily housebroken. I think the biggest mistake people make with housebreaking is they don't realize puppies need time to develop muscle control. You know, they just can't hold it until at least 4 months old. And many times people will correct the puppy for making a mistake. Good housebreaking is based on prevention, not correction.
The dog with, I think, the longest name, at least the most parts to the name, was the Petit Basset Griffon Van Deen, which you accredit with a very good sense of humor. How do you know? They do stand up or what?
The PBGV is a hound breed. They just have this expression that is clownish. You know, they are a very animated, smart hound. We like them a lot. But again, it's a hound, so one of the things you're going to have to counter is when that nose goes to the ground, the brain shuts off.
There's an awful lot of psychology in this book, essentially dog-human psychology. Here's another question about that. Your general philosophy in Pause to Consider is that there isn't any one dog that's right for everyone, obviously. It's a matter of fitting the dog to the person and their situation, isn't it?
Very much so, as far as people really fitting the dog to their lifestyle and what they're looking for. Isn't it one of the loves of my life in our first book, Good Owners, Great Dogs, my dog Bo is in there, who is a Rottweiler. I mean, he was one of the most phenomenal dogs I've ever met. Would I get another Rottweiler at this point in my life? No. They're high maintenance. I want something a little bit easier that is not going to be as protective and suspicious as sometimes the Rottweiler is, which is natural behavior. And there are Rottweilers doing pet therapy programs. I mean, they can be a terrific dog, but it is a high-maintenance dog. So at this point in my life, I wouldn't select one. Maybe later on when I have more time. But, you know, now we have Shepherds and Australian Shepherds. But we're on a farm. The dogs are working with us. They get a lot of exercise, so it's a good selection for us. But it may not be for somebody else, depending on what their lifestyle is. Do they have children? Are they moving? You know, if they have the time and the responsibility to live with a dog successfully.
At the risk of belaboring the really obvious, could you say something about why all puppies are cute?
All babies are cute. It brings out some of the better reactions from human beings. But they're babies. The thing is, you don't live with a puppy, you live with a dog. So understanding that the puppy is going to grow into something else, and puppyhood is a relatively short period of time. You know, it's the long haul that you want to look at.
Does the training that you describe in Pause to Consider have to be done by the owner, or can it be done by hired professionals, and does that make any difference?
The training, most of the training, Good Owners, Great Dogs is our main training book. All right, people have been very successful with that book and can do it themselves. There are a lot of books out on training as well as videos. It depends upon the dog and it depends upon the people. With some of the larger breeds, and let's say the category not for everyone, I'm more comfortable with them going through puppy class and being under the direction of a competent professional trainer.
By them, you mean the owners?
The owners. You know, the dog is as good as the owner. So as far as the information that the owner needs to be successful with the dog really needs to be learned by them. Plus, training is a skill. There's a certain understanding of psychology and timing. That needs to be practiced for people to be successful. And the trainer's responsibility is not to train the dog. The trainer's responsibility is to get the owners to train the dog and to be successful on that basis.
Towards the end of the book, you have a list of what the experts consider to be the worst dogs, or the ones that people should generally stay away from, and then you have your own list of what you think the worst dogs are that people should stay away from. Which dogs are on those lists?
I'd rather not categorize it as the worst dogs. There are some dogs that need more attention and exercise and direction than others. You know, the Chows, Dalmatians, Weimaraners. I mean, high energy levels on the whole. The Chows were bred to be basically attached to one or two people and everyone else can drop dead. You know, so if you're going to get a Chow, it means you're going to have to socialize them more and train them more. And the people that we talked to in the field, we looked at aggression levels and what dogs bite most often. And Chows are right up there along with Dalmatians and Cocker Spaniels and Rottweilers. So when you're looking at those breeds, it's critical that you're going to make sure that you're going to be dealing with somebody who really knows what they're doing, is really producing a correct temperament, and then you take that puppy and you raise it into a dog that is well-socialized and well-trained.
You mentioned a few times what sort of a cycle of media-generated popularity for a breed, and then a greater demand for that breed, and then problems with the breeding, and so on, and then sort of a recovery after that. What's involved with that process?
Well, you're seeing Jack Russells more and more in this Taco Bell commercial. You know, the Chihuahua Rescue are getting more and more Chihuahuas in because, people, I guess, think they're going to talk or something. But what happens when people make the wrong selection, the dog winds up suffering. And if you have a respect for life and the welfare of dogs, you know, either hold off and do your homework and make sure that this dog is going to fit into your lifestyle. Chihuahuas are not going to be a good family dog with children. They're way too small. You know, with a Jack Russell Terrier, again, they're a very primitive terrier. They do like to fight with other dogs. They love to kill small animals. And once stimulated, they bark a lot. If you know that, you can kind of expect the behavior and direct the dog's behavior. If you don't and you get this dog and then say, I can't live with this anymore, that's where they wind up getting either euthanized or surrendered. The reason we wrote Pause to Consider is to give people the needed information, both in temperament and genetic disease, for them to really make an informed choice. So if they do pick that puppy, the puppy is going to stay into the house from the time it got in there to the time it dies.
Based on the experience you've had, and with your co-author, you say 45 years in this area, speculate a little bit about the future of dogs and what you expect to be happening or what the trends are going to be in the next few years.
I think the big challenge with dogs, and especially with breeding of purebred dogs, is to keep them functional. You know, where before, if the dog wasn't working out because it didn't serve the function, the dog was removed from the gene pool. What's happening now is the dogs are being kept in the gene pool, so we're getting abnormal behavior. You know, when you have, let's say, the Golden Retriever, that was bred as a hunting dog and a working dog. Very few of them do that now. And in fact, a lot of the sporting breeds, you're finding a totally different type of dog called a field dog that's still functional, but it doesn't look anything like the show dog. I think the challenge is to how to keep that functionality within the breed to make sure that the dogs are going to be appropriate. As an example, with the Goldens, there are Goldens out there now that are more interested in fighting with other dogs than hunting. That's totally inappropriate for the breed. You know, same thing, any type of aggression in the Golden, we didn't see 15 years ago. Because they've gotten so popular, it's almost commonplace. And in my opinion, if you have an aggressive Golden, it is not viable breeding. And it, also, if it's dangerous, you're going to have to make different decisions because you made the wrong choice as far as where you got the dog from.
Is what happened to create that was that Golden Retrievers that weren't purely pure in terms of their traits, but who had these aggressive traits, were bred, which wouldn't have been bred earlier, but were because of the greater popularity, and then created these examples?
No, I think there, as far as there are breeders within Goldens that were either functioning with lack of information, lack of commitment to the breed, or just greed. You know, they just want to produce head count. They don't care about the welfare. And good breeders spend literally decades researching their breeds and following bloodlines and being very critical of their breeding stock, so they make sure that anything they're breeding is going to improve the breed, not take away from it. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people in dogs that are breeding dogs for very specific purposes and their own, but not for the betterment of the dogs. And whether they want to win in the show and they know the dog has an inappropriate temperament but good structure. Rule of thumb, Mark, when people ask what breeding priorities are, it should be health, temperament, and then structure. And it's always a great question to ask a breeder what her breeding priorities are.
Do you think, in terms of sort of cleaning up this problem, that what role can individual dog buyers play, and what role, if any, do you think there should be for guidelines for the industry that aren't in place now?
Well, I don't think we're ever going to find a time when we can legislate what responsibility is. And that's what it is. That's really, it's up to the consumer, because the consumer drives this. If people started going to the shelters and adopting dogs from there, going to breed rescue, adopting dogs from there, or taking the time to do their homework, talk to their veterinarian, talk to the local humane society, talk to a number of breed clubs, right, to get the information that you need to make an informed decision and know what the problems are with the breed. Every breed has problems. The good breeders really work very hard to make sure that they're not reproducing those. And the poor breeders, you know, people get schnookered. And the thing is, what's heartbreaking is that you get a dog, you fall in love with it, and you find out you have to have a hip replaced, you know, and it's going to cost you $3,000. You can prevent that from happening by going out and making sure that you're selecting the appropriate breeder to get the dog from. And Breed Rescue is terrific. You can get some wonderful dogs there.
Well, there are a lot of good ideas and a lot of specific information in Paws to Consider. And our last question here is, what do you attribute your having committed so many years of your life to dogs?
I think I've been blessed. This has taken me all over the world. I teach at Tufts School of Veterinary Medicine. This is our sixth book. I've been a reporter for WABC News and CBS Morning News. I've met people from all over the world in all walks of life, and I'm lucky because I love what I do. So it's pretty easy to continue with this.
Well, it shows in Paws to Consider, and I want to suggest that everyone take a look at it. Paws to Consider, Choosing the Right Dog for You and Your Family by Brian Kilcommons with his co-writer, Sarah Wilson. Thanks very much for being with us on bookchat.org.
Hey, thanks, Mark. This is fun.